that we've been able to identify and work with feel that this is a good way to estimate reliability. But as you can see in the materials we've provided, I mean, you know, just the guidance that's given to us that you would interpret this estimate as, you know, 0.4 is fair, 0.42 is moderate, it kind of shows you that there's probably not professional agreement for 100% of practitioners on what these numbers mean. So we feel very, very confidently because we are now investigating these kind of figures for reliability throughout our program and throughout many other measures and specific efforts underway in different states with different providers and different agencies. We feel very confident in the number we've given you, but we also feel that that's more information than most anyone else is putting forward. In fact, for instance, the prior heart failure and MI measures that went through NQF actually had adjusted R-squares of about 0.1 and never gave reliability estimates like this. So, again, we feel very confident that this number is what would be achieved in real practice and is based on a lot of experience, years of experience, but we don't feel that there's been a standardized approach to quoting these figures for our profession yet.
Okay, good. So I think we have a recommendation. Rocco is partial on the reliability with obviously strong a strong background text as far as what Bruce just provided.
Yes.
Okay. Consensus on that? Any other comments? Validity, I guess that would kind of go with the same discussion we just had. Can you make a suggestion here, Rocco?
Yeah, I would also here say partially the validity has been tested in with the NISQIP sample, and I think it's obviously a valid group of parameters that they're looking at. The concern would be it hasn't been tested in the general population, but other than that, I would say these are valid parameters.
So would you say that as complete as defined, or would you make it partial because of the potential extrapolation issue?
The extrapolation issue is why I listed it as partially.
Okay. Comments or any other thoughts on that? Okay. How about exclusions?
With respect to exclusions, they have identified clinically necessary exclusions. I think they've accurately identified them, and so I listed this as complete.
Okay. Any other comments around that? Risk adjustment?
We talked a little bit about this already, but with respect to risk adjustment, it's described very well in the NISQIP data. There were 20 predictors that they've talked about. As I said, I think maybe Bruce misunderstood the definitions. I didn't have the definitions for the risk adjustment variables, but I did have definitions for numerator. Because of the lack of definitions for the risk adjustment variables, I listed this partially, but I certainly can go to completely on this one as well.
The risk adjustment would come back as far as complete if you took it as defined, but if we add in the some of the previous conversations, it would be more partial. You're the surgeon.
I would go with partial.
Okay. Comments around that?
It's Brian. I'm just curious, and maybe Bruce can answer this. The using the regression model to incorporate the different codes that are in there that they themselves provide the risk adjustment, just to inform me, that's a validated measure that's been shown valid in other data sets?
That's what I asked earlier, Brian. That was the comment, I guess, that maybe, Bruce, I thought you said, no, it hadn't been validated.
I'm sorry. I'm hearing a different question from Brian. Brian, you're asking about the risk score used as an additional risk adjuster.
Right. You had described a really what I think is really interesting use of regression to include them in and of itself to be the risk adjustment, and that's validated.
There are a couple of publications out of NISQIP using that approach, and it is, you know, in sort of risk adjustment theory and risk adjustment textbooks. It is well described as a potential approach. It was not the original NSQIP approach, but it has been put in place into the NSQIP now. And so what Brian's specifically referring to, again, is every CPT code is entered into a preliminary regression against outcomes. This gives a risk score. We take the log odds of that, and this gives a risk score for every CPT code that is then re-entered into a full regression, including all the other independent variables. And we've found that actually this improves the fit of the model dramatically. So we can certainly provide additional internal evidence on that. It is also an approach that has been described in a number of different applications.
Yeah, and the reason I asked, I just wanted Bruce to clarify that on validity and go on record, is because I think this is pretty close to as complete as you're going to get for risk adjustment for any measure to do something like that, which is with data that's available and has been validated.
Rocco, I think the tide may turn here with the context of potentially what's achievable and what's being presented are pretty close. Do you want to take you complete or as a suggestion here?
My concern has been with respect to risk adjustment is the fact that it's difficult to do in a surgical population with respect to surgical complexity. And so for that reason alone, it's difficult for me to say completely. And then in addition, that the risk adjustment has not been done in the general population. Those are the two reasons. And that's why I said partially.
Let's stay with consensus around partial. Just obviously the context of the discussion is captured. And let's talk about meaningful differences.
I have measure does identify meaningful differences in performance that identifies statistically significant, practically clinically meaningful differences in performance. So I listed this as completely.
Yeah, that seems to be pretty easy discussion around that. Okay. How about comparability?
Comparability, I have that it is. It's difficult to answer this question because of the testing's only been done in a NISQIP population. So I'm not sure exactly how to grade this.
I'd be not applicable.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. Any other discussion around that? Okay. Last. How about disparities?
They have discussed disparities in their introduction and identified and indicated that there are significant disparities, but they haven't discussed. They don't feel that their measure will be stratified by race or ethnicity or other factors. There is a case mix adjustment that they will use, however. So again, I'm not certain exactly how to grade this, I said partially.
Okay. Comments around that? Okay. How about usability? Bruce?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I just want to make it clear, because I actually listened to this discussion earlier for one of the other measures as well, and maybe Reva could throw in clarification. But there are specific instructions from the NQF that race and ethnicity are not to be used for risk adjustment.
Okay.
So, again, we believe there are disparities across this measure. Race and ethnicity are not in the model to risk adjust. Specifically, again, based on the theory that if you adjust them, then you wipe out a potential disparity that you might want to identify. Reva, do we understand that correctly?
You do. I think we're confusing the difference between a risk adjustment model where you're identifying risk factors that in a typical regression, you certainly would not want to include disparities type factors because it would mask the disparities. On the other hand, that is different than stratification. Stratification is where you're able to look at the results among different subpopulations such that you could identify differences among those subpopulations. And the question is the measure specified and has the methodology that would allow you to do that. So it's not an either or. You don't want to bury things in the risk adjustment model, but at the same time, you would like to be able to identify disparities Are we collecting the right data elements so that a stratification by appropriate subpopulations is possible? So it's really two different types of looking at the data.
Yeah, this is Dick again. I agree with it. I agree with it the last time, and I agree with it this time, that I understand the NQF's position, and the question is just can it be used in that regard, and I would think that it could be, and from what we've seen, and it actually deserves a C.
This is Bruce. We have published, when I say we, I mean our profession, have published a number of studies on disparities, racial disparities, and other disparities based on NSQIP data. So we have certainly, I think, demonstrated that after the fact, those issues can be investigated. And again, we do not include race or ethnicity in this risk adjustment model. So I believe we have followed the instructions, but again, we're happy to take further instructions if that's indicated.
Rocco, I'm hearing a more consensus towards a complete as far as the evaluation here. Does that sound reasonable?
I think Reva summarized it well when she said that we're talking about two different things.
Yeah.
Are we talking about ways to measure disparities in care and provide results based on disparities in care, or are we talking about risk adjusting for race and disparities? They're, you know, very, very different things. And although I understand NISQIP, there's lots of papers, data from NISQIP that looks at disparities in care, it hasn't been outlined in this draft or in this measure. So for that reason, I just listed it as not applicable or not at all addressed. But I don't think it's completely addressed in any way with respect to how they plan to evaluate disparities in care.
All right. Based on your comments, we can certainly have the additional information that I think the measure developers could provide to make that clearer.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, let's move on, and we'll leave that as a partial with the discussions clearly both ways. Rocco, about usability, distinctive, mm-hmm. Yes, no?
So with respect to usability, it absolutely provides useful information and has provided useful information to NISQIP hospitals in the past, which has led to significant quality improvement initiatives. I listed this as completely for meaningful, understandable, and useful.
Yeah, I think probably under usability, we can almost take all three of them together because I think they're hand in hand. Would you propose something? Is that reasonable from your standpoint?
Absolutely.
Harmonization and added value, they're all complete?
Yes.
Okay. Discussions around that? Okay. Last one is feasibility.
Yeah.
Probably need to take this separately one by one.
Sure. So feasibility, the data generated as a byproduct of care processes. This is a real tough one. It's partially obtained as a byproduct of care processes, but it is not routinely measured by all hospitals. And for that reason, I listed it as partially. The information, the risk adjustment, and the other numerator, the other I forgot what I was saying, but basically the risk adjustment variables are not routinely collected. The numerators, the actual applications, the codes that are used or the definitions that are used are not routinely used by all hospitals, and for that reason I listed it partially. I'm not saying it couldn't be used, but it isn't routinely used.
Yeah.
Comments around that?
I think, this is Dick. I think that's fair. I really like the approach that was used. I like the final parsimonious model, but one of the key variables in here, or two of them actually, are preoperative functional status and wound class, sometimes collected explicitly for the latter perhaps, but the former is often not collected, but a very good thing to collect. Probably for that reason it deserves a P, but they deserve some credit, I think, for going after variables of this type.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Rocco, we have consensus, I think, on product of care. How about electronic? That seems pretty straightforward.
Yes. With respect to using electronic, are the data elements available electronically? Not by all facilities, and for that reason I listed partially. They certainly could be. Most of them could be available electronically.
Okay.
I had a question about that, and it's Brian. It just came down to, for instance, for some of the things you need to know, heart rate greater than 90, or you know, fever, presence of fever, is when you say it's available electronically, you mean in what form?
For example, the Mass General has a operative log that does list variations in heart rate, highest heart rate, lowest heart rates. There are facilities that have these, but I would say the majority of facilities don't have these numbers available electronically.
And it's not just for the operation, the time of the operation, right? It's within
the hospitalization.
Right. Correct.
So how do you know if someone may have sepsis and you, doesn't this require chart abstraction or prospective reporting for capture?
It absolutely does require chart extraction for the numerator to obtain the numerator variables. The definitions of the complications require a NISQIP nurse, and we'll talk about that with respect to the data collection strategy and implementation. I had that, feasibility is a major concern with this measure.
Okay, I think we had that as partial for those reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how about exclusions?
No additional data sources would be required besides the electronic record and the chart, medical chart. And so no other specified exclusions require additional data.
So you'd make this complete?
Yes.
Discussion around that? Inaccuracies and errors?
I have susceptibility to inaccuracies is minimal, so this is complete.
Comments around that? Okay, implementation. I think this is where you're going to have some comments.
So, yeah, this data collection strategy would be very difficult for most hospitals. It's major concern. The way NISQIP works, and Bruce can certainly comment more precisely about this as I'm, again, learning about this, it does require data collection by a hired nurse performing data extraction and a surgeon champion to oversee the program. The nurse extractor is highly trained, audited for quality purposes. It'd be very difficult to have a hospital run this without having somebody who's trained to look for these outcomes. The authors have conservatively estimated that a data extractor would require a commitment of 0.125 to 0.33 full-time equivalents. But I think, again, this is very difficult for hospitals to make this time commitment and additional expenses that would be required to properly institute this measure. So for that reason, I have data collection strategy implementation partially.
Okay. Any other comments around that?
This is Bruce. I'll just add that the American College of Surgeons and NISQIP specifically have interacted with NQF on measures in the past. And again, we believe we're following the instructions in that this measure is being specified based on experience with NSQIP, but if this measure were implemented, you would not have to be an NSQIP hospital to take part. You would simply have the necessary fields well-defined and available to you. We would have online training in those definitions and education for institutions that wish to take advantage of that. But basically, they would just need to collect the specified data for the specified cases. It would not be required that they actually be subscribing to NISQIP overall. On the FTE side, based on our NISQIP experience, where in general one FTE collects around 1,500 cases using a much larger set annually, we actually estimate that this measure would probably take about 1/20th of an FTE. but we very conservatively put into our specifications here between 1/8 and 1/3 because we did not want to be criticized for being over aggressive. But our hope is that hospitals and our profession in general would see the retirement of measures that we all do every day that take up resources, measures that are not helping us, in favor of measures like this where, yes, there might be a 1/8 FTE commitment, but we feel the information is much more effective at leading to quality improvement. So I agree with your assessment. I just wanted to add that information.
I think there's a movement, too, Rocco, from payer strategy to actually recognize you as a quality center if you're actually participating in a database assessment like this, so that there will likely be an incentive on the forward end of higher payments for people that are centers that are participating in those things. So I think the end game is to have those as offset costs. But that's a little comments noted. I think we can't go too far down that discussion. So thank you, Rocco, for a conversation that gets us a little bit back on time here, too.
Yes, and Dave, this is Reva. I just want to say in follow-up for this, the conversation we had about the presence of the CPT codes, and looking at the information that we have here at NQF, Bruce, we don't have those. I'm going to send you what we've got, and I'll show you, and perhaps maybe we can, get the information a little bit better aligned. And perhaps that will help answer some of these questions. So we do have some time to fill in some of these questionable areas or provide some clarification for the group.
Sure, Reva, but I just want to clarify. I mean, I'm looking at the measure paperwork specifically, and under denominator statement, there's a long list of CPT codes.
Yeah, there's not on ours.
Yeah,
right.
that's what
okay.
I'm saying. I'll show you what we have, and we'll have to see what the differences are, Bruce. That's
okay.
A bit of a puzzle.
Okay, very good.
Bruce, these are just, these again are subject to kind of recommendations going forward, so lots of time to, not
yeah,
lots
we'll
of time.
Yeah, we'll get things clarified.
Yeah.
As we want to.
Okay, any other conversation around that measure? Okay, let's close, if we can, with one more to Karen, if you would take us through the opioid measure. Do we have the Pfizer sponsor on the phone yet?
No. I'm not sure we were expecting anybody.
Okay. Karen?
Okay. So this is an opioid-related system distress bill, which is being proposed to monitor opioid-related symptoms and distress from them. Most of the form that I was sent did not have information actually provided, so I did a bit of literature search on my own. What they're proposing to use, form that was developed to capture 9 or 10 symptoms which are felt to be secondary to opiates. These range in type from nausea, constipation, itching, difficulty with urination, confusion, retching, vomiting, etc. And then patients were supposed to describe whether they had these symptoms or not, and then if they did, how severe were they, how often they had them, and how much distress or bother was it causing them. Now, I need to point out right away that this was developed specifically to assess whether or not COX-2 inhibitor drugs were more or less effective at providing analgesia without causing side effects than opiates. So it was developed in the context of drug studies looking at COX-2 inhibitors. The only group here to be using this tool are people who are either funded by or employed by Pfizer or a company that is hired by Pfizer. There were two papers provided which did do an analysis of the validity and reliability of the tool. The population is very narrowly defined. So it's people who are post-op, either abdominal surgeries, a variety of abdominal surgeries, CABG, or laparoscopic cholecystectomy. So there were certain exclusion criteria that were listed in the original studies. The actual validation studies are a retrospective reanalysis of the data that was actually presented in some original papers looking at the satisfaction and analgesic benefit of COX-2 inhibitors. Those original studies did define the exclusion criteria, and as you might expect for a surgical study, some of the exclusion criteria, for instance, for the LAP-COLI group were that they couldn't have acute pancreatitis, they weren't supposed to have had chronic pain, which required opiates, or cancer. In terms of the CABG, people who were excluded were people under age 77, BMIs less than or greater than 40, EF less than 35%. For the abdominal surgery group, similar operative requirements, which you would reasonably expect would be excluded. But one of the major exclusion criteria, because this tool was designed for an assessment of an NSAID, is that they excluded anyone who had a risk of bleeding, particularly someone who would have a risk of bleeding if they were given NSAIDs. And I don't think that that's very appropriate for a tool that is supposed to be used at this point to measure opiate side effects. So it would exclude a lot of people who probably should get opiates. That being said, I think I can go on to talk about importance unless you have specific questions about the actual assessment tool. There were some attachments with this, and the tool is one of the attachments. The last thing I would point out is that this tool does not appear to have any patient base of outcomes that are important to patients. Symptoms, it appears to have been selected by the investigators themselves, and it's based on a prior survey which was developed for cancer patients of ongoing pain issues and who are using opiates. There may be some limitations there in terms of outcomes that would be important to NQF.
Karen, this is Dave. Just two quick questions. One is this, these are both to Reva, is this a proprietary tool that they own, number one? And number two is, where's the rest of their application? They seem to have missed, and I want to, maybe we can shorten the discussion pretty quickly, because there's really a lack of preparedness on this application.
Once we received this and realized it was blank, we've been in, had attempted multiple times to contact them and advise them that it was incomplete and asking for additional information, and really with very little response from them, and certainly with no additional information. I think it would be very difficult for this group to do any kind of major evaluation of this measure without additional information. And so if you would like to say that you're unable to evaluate it because there was insufficient information, that would be perfectly reasonable.
Yeah, that's where I was headed. And I would also like to ask if they were choose to resubmit it, or maybe you know if it's a proprietary tool, since it was developed by a company that obviously has an interest in this space.
I'm not 100% sure. Often these tools are not, but I can double-check that.
Yeah. Karen,
it says proprietary measure on page one.
Yeah,
I know. However, as I said, there are a lot of publications using it, but if you look at who's publishing, they're all within the same group that I mentioned.
This is Dick Reva. Did they sign the transfer of rights agreement for IP?
Yes, they have, and that's one of the things that, they did that part of it, but it's been difficult just trying to get the rest of the information from them.
Mm-hmm. Karen, with permission, just as a suggestion, as the chair, I'd like to entertain your proposal that we table this and that we just not table it, but just send it back to the developer for further information. It's as information is lacking, we can't process the discussion accordingly.
That's fine with me.
Yeah. I agree.
Okay, and that's fine with me here at NQF.
Okay. So I guess what I'd like to look at is next steps. And Reva, I know you've taken notes on everything, but we're gonna need to get this captured a little bit and circulated. Can you walk us through how you'd like us to work?
Yeah, absolutely. The next steps, are to, for me to pull all this together. The when we get the recording, we'll be posting that, so if anybody wants to go back and listen to it again, you're certainly welcome to. And then once I have the summary done, I'll send it to you all, particularly if we can get some clarifications. There were some of the questions that were generated through the major developers. We asked them and encouraged them to respond and try and include that to bring more comprehensive set of information together, both for you, but so we can take to the steering committee. So you can expect that from me in about, I'm having to do them real quick these days because we've got so many of them, probably in about a week. And then I will very much appreciate it if you do go through it provide any additions, you know, beef it up, add clarifications, be sure I've captured what you're saying accurately. And that will form the basis of going ahead. At the same time we hear back from major developers, I will be sharing that information with you so that if you want to alter or add to your evaluation in the next couple of weeks, that will be fine also. So this is a bit of a dynamic process as we're trying to, get all the information together that we need.
One suggestion, just as we respond, if I think it would be helpful to see what the other comments are so we could respond to all so we can see that, but that'll allow each other to each of us so we're not redundant. Maybe we could work off of somebody else's track changes if there's a to make it simpler, but if we can kind of keep that process, that I think it'll make it easier to read on the end.
All right. That's good. So that's all I want to do. One more thing we have to do is I need to talk with the operator. Tanya, are you still there?
Yes.
Do we have anyone on the participants or the audience line?
No.
Okay. We need to open that and see if they have any questions or comments. Are the lines open?
They are.
All right. Does anyone have any question or comment to make at this point? Okay. I'm not hearing any. Certainly, we'd welcome any comments if there are any. All right. Thank you all very much. I think we're at the end of a long morning, but the work was done. And like I say, over the next couple of weeks, we'll have ongoing conversations primarily by email to finalize your evaluations and your ratings and the explanations that go around them. And then this will go to the steering committee on April 20th or 21st. I will be presenting them. Dr. Johnson will be on the committee. He'll be there to help facilitate the conversation about what your ratings mean and why you thought the way you did. And then the steering committee will be making the final ratings on the four major criteria as well as the recommendation for endorsement or not. So that's what's happening going forward. Anybody have any questions or last comments?
I'll just echo Reva's thanks for you all and fantastic insight and guidance and great discussions duly noted. Reva said it's a long morning, but the good news is it's a short plane ride home.
Yeah. Exactly.
Very good. Excellent.
Thank you,
Reva, anything else?
Very, very much. Don't hesitate to contact me if there's any questions or concerns, but we'll definitely be in touch.
Okay. Reva, could you stay on just for a second? And then,
sure.
Well run, David.
Thank you all.
Thanks. Nice job, David.
Thanks much.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Okay.
Just apologies for running a little late.
It's okay. I didn't know if the conference call was a problem, but apparently not, so there we are.
No, not at all. No, I think it was great that the having the developer be a little bit more assertive was a little bit obnoxious, I thought.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, I've worked with Bruce before, and I didn't know. Who knew?
Well, he was pretty insulting to Rocco. Like, well, I'm looking right, and my eyes are right there, and it just—I thought it was a little bit.
And I'm not sure what he's looking at because I would have to agree with Rocco. What I'm seeing is what Rocco.
I've got nothing either. So it just, yeah. So anyway, you could get that and circulate it, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, I'm going to. I'm going to send what we have to Bruce and see what it is he's looking at. He can send that back to me.
Good.
We'll
good.
See what the deal is there.
Okay. Well, great to work with you again, and look forward to getting this.
You did an excellent job. You were, a very strong chair, and I really do appreciate the help, because if the chair doesn't do it, then I have to do it.
Yeah, good. Okay, we'll get back in touch soon.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Ruth.